All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Alabama. 1978. Imagine this. You're a salesman, maybe, driving through the deep rural South. It's late, far past any city lights.
Yeah, and you're probably just looking for essentials, right? A cheap room, some warm coffee.
Exactly. Maybe, if you're lucky, a hot meal that actually tastes like something decent.
Mm-hmm.
And then, seemingly in the middle of nowhere, like 15 miles from the nearest town, you'd see it, the Blackwood Inn.
And you'd meet its proprietor, Clint Orson. But this isn't really a story about a friendly meeting. It's more about, well, a transaction, a very calculated one happening way out in isolation.
It really is. And that's what we're diving into today. This isn't just recounting a tragic true crime story. It's about that specific moment when a local crime just explodes into this terrifying small town folklore.
Mm-hmm. We've got the official reports, the facts about Clint Orson, the motel, and of course, his now infamous chili.
Right. But the really interesting part, for us anyway, is that we're cross-referencing this whole event against something pretty unusual, this thematic framework called the Inspector Story Index.
And this index, it's our tool for today. It gives us these sort of structural parallels, you know, drawn from myths, stories, cultural narratives, things that help us analyze the mechanism of what happened. Betrayal, control, fear.
It might sound a bit niche, these references.
Yeah, maybe. But we're not using them as literal comparisons. Think of it more like psychological shorthand. It helps us look at the deep structures of how systems work or how they can be corrupted, whether those systems seem benign or, well, obviously malignant like this one.
So our mission today, for you listening, isn't just to lay out the chilling facts of the Blackwood Inn. It's to try and figure out why this specific story, you know, mm-hmm. the friendly owner, the comfort food, the horrifying discovery, why it has such a lasting, deep psychological grip.
And we'll use these external themes, these frameworks, to unpack how Clint Orson managed to weaponize something as basic as hospitality. How he turned trust itself into, well, a deadly system.
It's really a study in how the mundane can be corrupted, isn't it?
Completely. The facts themselves are stark, grim. But when you look at them through this lens of, say, protocol and deletion, you see this almost masterclass in exploiting basic human needs. Vulnerability.
Okay, let's unpack this, right? So part one, setting the stage. We need to really understand the anatomy of this roadside trap.
And that starts with the environment. Rural Alabama, late 1970s.
The sources keep hammering this home. Uh-huh. 15 miles from the nearest town, miles from anything, really.
And that's not just physical distance. You have to think about what that means logistically, sociologically. It's almost a vacuum.
Right. Isolation is maybe the single biggest factor here.
Absolutely. Because of that distance meant the Blackwood Inn wasn't operating under the usual, you know, small town checks and balances. There's no Yelp back then.
Huh. Definitely not. No online reviews. Not even much local gossip filtering back if you're just passing through. It survived based purely on immediate need.
It was just a reliable stop, pure necessity. It offered those bare essentials. Cheap room, working shower, warm coffee, nothing more, nothing less.
And the sources paint a picture, don't they? This rusted motel sign flickering.
Yeah.
Maybe some neon buzzing against the humid air.
Rain on the asphalt, steam coming off coffee cups in the cool air. It gives you this really strong sense of weary solitude.
Which is exactly how a tired traveler feels anyway, right? You're already in that state.
Exactly. When you're exhausted, alone on the road, your guard is naturally down. You're just looking for the simplest, quickest comfort and safety.
And the motel provides that basic warmth, which makes the traveler immediately vulnerable.
You're primed to accept the place at face value. It creates the perfect foundation for someone like Clint Orson to build his, well, his predatory operation.
And Clint himself. He was the crucial piece. He wasn't some obviously creepy figure lurking in the shadows.
No, not at all. He was apparently the picture of friendly service, polite, always smiling, and known locally, really well known, for one specific thing.
His famous homemade chili.
That persona, it seems like it was carefully built. Locals, according to the reports, described him as the kind of man who could fix anything but his own loneliness.
That's such a telling description.
Isn't it? Because that perceived loneliness, whether it was real or just an act, it's a brilliant psychological tool. It makes strangers feel safe, maybe even a little sorry for him.
Like they have the upper hand emotionally.
Precisely. It disguises the threat completely. He looks like someone who needs your company, not someone plotting against you.
Which brings us right to that thematic idea you mentioned, the false front.
Yeah.
The bait.
Yeah, exactly. This is where the Inspector Index gives us a structural parallel. It connects to the story of Aladdin.
Aladdin? How does that fit?
Well, the callback is, as Aladdin showed, the treasure is usually a trap.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Clint's friendliness, his politeness.
Yeah.
And especially that famous chili.
That's the treasure, the perceived value. It's the lure warmth, food, a friendly face, low cost of entry. But the motel itself, the system operating inside it.
That was the trap.
That was the trap. He used this image of approachable, almost sad vulnerability to deliberately lower the defenses of people who are already tired, transient, and trusting.
And this brings us to the specific victim in the account we have reliable details on. Jack Rayner, sometimes spelled Rayner in the sources.
Right. He was a traveling salesman heading down to New Orleans on business. Just the classic transient figure focused on getting somewhere else, anonymous, alone.
The perfect target, really. Because if he vanished...
Who would notice immediately? He's just a name on a sales route until he misses his next check-in, maybe days later.
And the sources give us this chilling detail about the check-in. The conversation that basically sealed Jack's fate.
This is the key moment. Clint asks Jack, supposedly just making small talk, anyone know you're traveling this way?
And Jack apparently just laughs it off. Says no, doesn't think anything of it.
But that's it. That's the switch flicked. For Jack, it's forgettable banter, harmless chat with the motel guy.
But for Clint Orson,
it's the final step in his risk assessment. It's confirmation. Confirmation that he has the complete anonymity he needs to. Well, to enact his hidden protocol, his deadly hospitality.
Looking back, that question isn't just chilling. It defines the whole crime, doesn't it? It tells you his priority wasn't just finding a victim.
No, it was finding an untraceable victim. He's thinking about documentary erasure from the very first moment, from the handshake.
That's the really interesting thing here. It implies a system.
It's the difference between, say, a crime of passion and a crime of process. He wasn't checking if Jack had money, not primarily. He was checking if Jack had a footprint. Digital wasn't a thing then, but a social footprint, a network that would trigger an immediate search.
And when Jack said no,
he basically confirmed his own deletion was feasible, already underway in Clint's mind.
Okay, so that sets up the night. The transition from this slightly off but seemingly okay chicken to outright terror. Yeah, it starts around midnight.
Jack's asleep, probably felt, you know, relatively secure. Remote place, cheap room, but seems safe enough.
And the thing that wakes him isn't loud or violent. That's what's so effective about this part of the narrative.
It's a small sound, domestic almost. Jack wakes up because he hears humming in the hallway.
Just humming.
Yeah.
And the reports specify an old country tune.
Yeah. Something you'd associate with chores, maybe. Routine work. Harmless. But the sources really emphasize how, in that context, midnight, isolated motel, that ordinary sound becomes terrifying.
Because it implies, what, calmness? Intent?
I think it implies routine focus. This isn't someone sneaking around nervously. This is someone working calmly, methodically.
Like a professional doing their job.
Exactly. It signals the threat isn't chaotic rage. It's controlled. Contained malice. It's not the violence itself yet. It's the preparation, the process unfolding.
And then the visual confirmation. He looks through the crack under the door.
And sees almost nothing. Just a pair of boots standing still.
That stillness. That's incredibly menacing, isn't it? The humming suggests movement, life. But the boots are just stationary.
Yeah.
Waiting.
It creates this intense cognitive dissonance. Sound says human normal activity, sight says. Waiting predator. It freezes you for a second, trying to make sense of it.
Unlike a shout or a crash, which triggers immediate fight or flight.
Right. The humming and the stillness, they make you observe, try to rationalize, which buys the predator time.
Yeah.
But then, The doorknob starts to turn.
And that's it. The moment the illusion shatters, the trust is gone, the false front collapses.
That cheap room is instantly transformed from a basic sanctuary into a cage. And Jack's reaction is pure survival instinct. No hesitation.
He doesn't try to reason, doesn't try to fight back at the door. He just goes.
Bolts. Straight for the window. And the sensory details here are so visceral, so key to why this story sticks. The sound of that glass shattering.
And then sprinting into the woods. Barefoot.
Yeah, cutting himself immediately. Just raw, unthinking panic, overriding pain, overriding everything except the need to get away.
It's such a stark contrast. Yeah. Inside the motel. Clint's controlled, quiet, methodical process.
Outside, total chaos, pain, desperate flight into the dark, unfamiliar wilderness.
And he runs until dawn. Just keeps going through the woods until he finally hits the highway. The reports say bloodied and shaking.
The state he was in physically proves the sheer terror. This wasn't just escaping a robbery attempt. This was escaping something profoundly wrong, something systemic tied to the motel itself.
And his condition, his appearance, when he stumbled onto that highway, bloodied, terrified, maybe incoherent, but that's what guaranteed the police took it seriously.
Right.
Right away.
He was the living proof, the traumatized evidence that something horrific was happening back at the Blackwood Inn, 15 miles down that road. And maybe he was the only one who'd managed to break out of the system.
So the police go to investigate.
Yeah.
And they don't find a struggle, do they? No dramatic confrontation.
No. They find silence, unnerving quiet. Clint Orson is still there, maybe still perfectly calm. The sources talk about the shock among the officers when they entered the kitchen.
That feeling of discovery.
Good.
The grim realization that the horror wasn't hidden in some dark corner, but right there in the most domestic, most reassuring part of the motel. The kitchen, right? The heart of the hospitality. The place that Chili came from. And the investigation naturally leads them there, to the freezer.
And what they find isn't chaotic or hidden in a panic. It speaks to the system again. The reports say several large black bags inside the commercial grade kitchen freezer.
Commercial grade. This wasn't just a home fridge.
No, this was part of the business infrastructure.
Yeah.
And the bags themselves suggest organization, method, maybe even labeled. We don't know. But it points to a repeat operation, a protocol.
And the shapes inside. The officers didn't even need to open them, did they?
Reports say the shapes were disturbingly familiar and disturbingly human. They knew. Instantly. You can only imagine that moment of freezing, realizing the unthinkable truth integrated into the daily running of this place.
This seems like a good point to bring in that thematic analysis again, the idea of hidden systems.
Absolutely. We look at the Inspector Index theme about governance, about protocols. There's a specific callback referencing, believe it or not, Disney World.
Disney World. How on earth does that connect to this?
The callback is, as in Disney World, control hides best in plain sight.
Okay, explain that, because it sounds jarring.
It's about the structure of control. Disney World runs on these incredibly efficient but largely invisible protocols. Crowd control, waste management, character appearances. It's all meticulously managed behind the scenes to present a seamless, happy facade.
Right. The magic relies on hiding the mechanisms.
Exactly. Clint Orson, in his own horrifying way, ran the Blackwood Inn like that. The polite smile, the cheap room, the chili that was the customer-facing protocol, the magic. But the freezer, the bags, the recipe, that was the hidden efficient system for processing and disposal. It ensured the operation could continue smoothly without leaving messy evidence that contradicted the inn's harmless reputation.
Control hiding in plain sight. Wow.
The system seems simple, predictable, safe. And that's where the control is most effective.
And then comes the quote, the line that elevates this from a gruesome murder case into something else entirely, pure American Gothic.
When the police ask him about the bags in the freezer, Clint Orson, apparently still calm, just says it. That's my secret recipe.
Ugh, that single sentence just reframes everything.
It connects the horror, the dismemberment, the implied cannibalism directly, explicitly to the one thing people liked about the inn.
Mm.
The chili. It's the ultimate act of horrific erasure, the final consumable step in his hidden protocol.
It's the culinary paradox. That's what makes it so deeply disturbing, why it became instant folklore.
The very thing meant to offer comfort, warmth, home, was actually the disposal system, the evidence itself.
The sheer audacity. Yeah. Using the most trusted part of his business to hide the atrocity, it breaks your brain psychologically.
And it makes you question everything. Was Jack Raynor just lucky? Did he escape before he unknowingly ate the evidence of whoever came before him? The implication is horrifying that the final act of hospitality was consuming the proof.
So what does this all mean? What happens when a system like this is exposed so brutally?
Total shutdown. Immediate condemnation. The motel was closed, the property seized. Given the nature of the crime, the public reaction, they moved to demolish the physical structure entirely.
Trying to erase the place itself?
Right. The community needed to wipe away every physical trace of that horrifying system.
But like all powerful legends, the story doesn't just vanish when the building does.
No. The sources emphasize the local folklore that apparently persists even now. This idea that the smell of chili, sometimes described as sweet and metallic, lingers there, especially on humid nights or when it rains.
That sensory haunting. That's what keeps it alive, isn't it? It moves it beyond the police reports and firmly into the realm of ghost stories.
The attempt to bulldoze the physical site, it failed to bulldoze the psychological footprint. The building's gone, but the memory, that olfactory artifact, the terrifying association with the chili, becomes the foundation of the legend.
Okay, this brings us squarely into the final part, the synthesis. Using that Inspector Index framework to really dig into the why this resonates. The incident is terrifying enough on its own, but the index themes help us see Orson's methods as a case study for these deeper fears about systems, about being erased.
Let's start with that theme of erasure. Clint Orson was trying to achieve it on multiple levels, wasn't he?
Yeah, physically, yep. Socially, documentarily. Asking Jack if anyone knew he was coming, that's trying to delete the social trace.
And the recipe itself is the attempt at ultimate physical deletion, dissolving the evidence into something else entirely.
So how do the index motifs fit? You mentioned Klaus Richter, the erased soldier, where erasure becomes the evidence, and Real Wendy, records can freeze while lives keep moving.
The underlying principle there is that total deletion is basically impossible. When you try so meticulously to destroy every trace of someone, physical and social, you inadvertently create a different kind of evidence.
The evidence of the system itself.
Exactly. The evidence of the method used to erase them. Clint tried to turn people into non-persons, but his very organized attempt at concealment, the recipe protocol, left behind this unforgettable, horrifying proof of the system. The absence of the victims becomes secondary to the chilling presence of the process that consumed them.
So his meticulousness backfired in a way. The black bags, the careful questioning, it all points to his main goal. Not being just murder, but erasure to keep the operation running.
Precisely. He wanted operational continuity. But the highly organized attempt to hide everything, that became the story. The method of deletion is what lingers, not just the fact of deletion.
And if the erasure fails, what's left? What carries the story forward? You said the chili, the legend of the recipe, the smell.
Which takes us to that other index theme, the object or the artifact that outlives its creator.
Right. The forbidden tech, the artifact, like the Luke Skywalker reference, the weapon is a witness.
Yeah. Or sometimes this phrase is Luanse Among. The point is, the tool used for the crime or the result of the crime becomes the testimony. Here, the weapon wasn't just a knife or whatever tools he used. It was the entire system of processing. The chili was the concealment technology.
The knife was just a means to an end. The chili was the end product, the final stage of the system.
Correct. The physical evidence in the bags was crucial for conviction, obviously. But the legend, the thing that lasts, that's the chili. The memory of it, the horrifying knowledge of its ingredients, the supposed lingering smell. It persists long after Clint Orson is gone. It's like the Buzz Lightyear callback. Artifacts outlive their makers. The story of the Blackwood Inn is carried by the horrific artifact of its own making. The recipe is the legend.
Okay, let's shift to the psychology of the setup, the false game. We talk about Jack Raynor stopping because he was just following the rules of the road. See a sign, pull over, get some rest.
And Clint Orson relied completely on that obedience, that ingrained behavior. He used it to initiate his own game, a false game hidden inside the normal one.
This connects to that Monopoly theme you brought up earlier.
Yeah, the idea that the game trains you before it pays you. Or maybe, in this case, before it consumes you. Travelers are trained by society, by the highway system, by sheer exhaustion, to trust these roadside stops as a predictable, necessary exchange.
And Clint weaponized that training.
Absolutely. The traveler's obedience, their assumption that the system is basically benign, cheap room for a few dollars, that's the absolute prerequisite for his predatory game to work, They think they're playing one game.
The game of roadside commerce, following the established rules.
While Clint is running this hidden parallel game where the real currency is anonymity and ultimately your life, the cheap room and the coffee were just the tokens you used to enter his much deadlier system, one with entirely different stakes.
It really highlights the inherent vulnerability of being a traveler, doesn't it? You have to rely on strangers in isolated places sometimes.
And Clint exploited the efficiency of that reliance. If he'd been overtly hostile or strange, people wouldn't have stopped. His system required that superficial politeness, that conformity to the expected norm.
So the chilling takeaway from this whole systemic view
mm-hmm.
is that the Blackwood Inn worked precisely because it was so ordinary, so basic.
I think so. It was the lowest common denominator of hospitality that minimized the variables, made the false game easier to run repeatedly without raising flags. You're tired, you're alone, you obey the signs, you follow the script. And you walk right into the trap.
It's a really profound warning about how the most predictable, mundane-seeming systems can hide the most organized, insidious forms of control. The story ends up being about the very infrastructure of trust itself.
Yeah, a perfect storm. Isolation, psychological bait, methodical control, all wrapped up in the sensory memory of something as simple as a bowl of chili. It's no wonder it has such a grip.
So wrapping this up, this deep dive into the admittedly limited sources around Clint Orson really confirms it. The terrifying effectiveness of his false front wasn't just random malice. It was strategic. Exploiting traveler obedience, corrupting hospitality itself.
And those sensory details, the quiet humming, the smell, the shattering glass, that's what locks it into memory, will turn it instantly into legend.
What we really learn through this thematic lens, I think, is how folklore often springs up when a system we trust, something we assume is there to protect us or serve us, reveals itself to be predatory.
Right. Clint Orson didn't just kill people. He poisoned the very idea of roadside refuge. He used the traveler's own needs, exhaustion, trust against them. The sources really do push us to see this real event through that lens of American Gothic myth, where the deepest horror is domestic disguised as kindness.
And the ultimate lesson seems to be about the power of what refuses to be erased. The story persists because the psychological trauma embodied in that awful recipe just lingers.
Which leaves a final question for you, the listener. Even when the killer is caught, the place is torn down, the facts are laid out, why does the legend hang around? Maybe it's because the core anxiety, the betrayal of trust when you're most vulnerable alone out there, isn't something that a trial or a demolition can ever fully resolve. That fear remains.
They bulldoze the Blackwood Inn, condemn the land, shut it all down. But that final image from the sources, it captures that lingering folklore perfectly. The sign, maybe just the post where it stood, or maybe in local memory, it still flickers. And if you happen to pull over for coffee somewhere along Highway 19, listen close.
You might just hear the methodical, quiet humming of an old country tune.
On the hunt for lost ROI? Chart a course and find hidden profit potential with Acuron Corn Herbicide. It's the only herbicide strong enough to bury competing weeds and help you unearth 5 to 15 more bushels per acre. How's that for hidden riches? Uncover the real value of Acuron at Acuron-Herbicide.com. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.